the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Well, if you've been watching the evening news over the last week, you're probably aware that tax reform is back up on the front burner. And what will this mean to individuals, especially those with large estates? To help figure this out, joining me on the program is Todd Schneider. He's a estate planning partner with Goodwin and Brown. And Todd, let's begin with the estate planning provisions of this bill. As I understand it, they basically double the exemption. Let's talk about that and what that means for individuals.
Well, terrific. And first of all, thanks for having me on your program. So first of all, in the proposed tax law, the exemption is scheduled to increase from a baseline of $5 million per person to $10 million per person. And with an eventual phase out of the entire estate tax exemption in 2023.
So if that does increase, I mean, for, you know, a lot of individuals today, the average couple, most people with a living trust can take that $5.5 million, double it with a living trust, and it goes to $11 million. So under this provision, it would go to over $22 million. Todd, for most people, unless you own a large land holdings or you have a corporation that's worth a lot of money, that eliminates most taxes for individuals, would you say?
That's correct. In fact, under the current tax law, the exemption amount, which is scheduled to increase to $5.6 million starting in January 1st of next year, that essentially eliminates the estate tax for 99.8% of the entire population. Of all of the individuals who passed away last year, there were less than 6,000 families that actually had to pay an estate tax. And so with an increase or a doubling of that exemption amount, we can anticipate that the number of estates that will actually have to pay an estate tax will likely decrease even further.
You know, the one thing I know when they pass tax bills, and this goes back to George W. Bush, if they don't pass the tax bill with a majority, these tax bills sunset within 10 years, as happened with some of the tax cuts under George W. Bush. And right now, the Republicans only control 52 senators in the Senate, and the Democrats have indicated they're probably not going to vote for this. So there's a possibility if this does get passed, Todd, this could sunset in 10 years. So let's just assume that that's indeed the case, that it gets passed, but they don't have the 60 majority, and this bill gets sunsetted in 10 years. What would that imply for tax planning strategies? If, for example, you're Larry Lots of Bucks, maybe you're a farmer in the Midwest and you own several thousand acres of land for farming, which could be worth a lot of money, even though it may not generate a fortune, the land is worth a lot. So what does that imply for tax planning when you know the bill goes away in 10 years?
Well, that's a very good question, Jim, and it sort of leads to the analysis that we had back in 2001, which was a situation where we were anticipating the eventual repeal of the federal estate tax and a implementation of a one-year complete repeal of the estate tax, with the estate tax coming back the following year with the same exemption that we had previously due to budgetary reasons. What it really means for clients of ours is they have to plan with flexibility. In fact, it makes it much more complicated because we know what the tax laws are currently. We know what the tax laws may eventually be, but we have to plan with some kind of flexibility to take into account multiple scenarios versus just the one scenario that we have currently. So for a client that has a potentially taxable estate, even under the new tax laws, I would recommend that they build in as many flexible provisions into their estate plan as possible. Perhaps they can do some intergenerational wealth transfers and even build those into the years in which we anticipate that we're not going to have a potential estate tax. That could potentially provide them with opportunities to transfer wealth down to grandchildren or even great-grandchildren. But the main thing that clients have to realize is that the estate tax has been repealed in at least three times in our nation's history, and it has always come back. And we have elections every 2 years, and it's likely that we're going to see different majorities in Congress and potentially in the White House, obviously. So we should plan for change, and we should anticipate that things will not remain stagnant in either the income tax or the estate tax world.
So let's take a situation. Let's say this does get passed. The exemption goes to $11.2 million. Let's say I'm Larry Lotsenbach. I'm worth maybe $30 million. I own real estate, or maybe it's a family business. Would it make sense, Todd, to transfer under the exemption part of the assets in an irrevocable trust so you get it out of your estate? Or, as you mentioned, maybe do something where you pass assets on to another generation, maybe your grandchildren?
Well, that could certainly be a good planning strategy for certain types of clients. Again, if they would like to take advantage of the ability to potentially transfer assets completely estate tax-free. Now, one thing that our clients do need to keep in mind is that there is no scheduled repeal necessarily in the near future of the gift tax, which is currently tied to the estate tax exemption. And there's also no indication as to whether the Congress will eliminate the so-called step-up in tax basis, which is an ability to avoid capital gains taxes upon the sale of assets after the death of an individual who may be subject to estate tax. So there's a whole lot of uncertainties in the current form of the tax law, and I think that some of that's probably going to come out in the wash. I think that there's going to be a series of negotiations, and eventually we're going to see some significant changes. But for those clients, if we do have an exemption that's $11.2 million, I oftentimes do recommend that they set aside some of their assets in an irrevocable trust that they can eventually pass on to children, grandchildren, and potentially even great-grandchildren.
Let's say that, taking that same estate, you have $30 million and you decide that you want to put, let's say, $11 million into an irrevocable trust. And let's say down the road, the estate tax comes back, another administration comes in, they lower the exemption, raise the tax rates. Can they go after something that's already been put in an irrevocable trust? In other words, can they come back and say, hey, look, you did that to avoid taxes, we're going to come back and tax it?
Well, again, Jim, that's a very good question. I know one tenet of the tax laws are that you cannot go back and tax something that was legal at the time. And you can't go back, or at least Congress can't go back and retroactively enact a tax that would try to capture a viable or a legal use of a, as some people call it, a tax loophole, and try to recapture some of those taxes that were avoided pursuant to a legitimate tax planning device. So I would suspect that that would not be the case. I think if a client makes an irrevocable transfer to a trust to transfer certain assets out of their taxable estate, that Congress would not be able to go back and enact a retroactive tax law that could capture or at least bring some of those assets back into an individual's estate.
Now, I want to go, given where we are right now, which is roughly, we'll round it off to $5.5 million. Todd, a lot of individuals put in or set up something called an AB trust, where when one spouse passed away, part of the assets would get split and put into, let's say, the B trust. And a lot of that isn't really appropriate today because they've raised the exemption under Obama to roughly $5 million. And then, of course, they indexed it to inflation. Can we talk about that for a minute and how many people may be sitting on trusts that would no longer work or could create some potential problems for them or hassles when it's not necessary?
Yeah, that's correct, Jim. In fact, a lot of clients signed trust agreements that had a provision in it that set aside the amount that could be sheltered from a federal estate tax, and the balance of the trust assets were set aside in a trust for the benefit of a surviving spouse. Now, with the increase in the exemption amounts, as you mentioned, to $5.5 million and soon to be $5.6 million next year, if the current tax law does not come into effect, that could end up moving far too many assets into the so-called B trust, or the trust that will escape estate tax at the death of both the first spouse and the second spouse. In the 2012 tax law, there was a new provision which allowed spouses to essentially gift or inherit their estate tax exemption, and that's a new concept called portability. So what we've seen a lot with clients that are under the exemption amount or have assets that do not exceed the exemption amount is that they're coming back in and they're simplifying their estate plan. They're essentially utilizing this ability to use so-called portability and pass the exemption amount to a surviving spouse. So by simplifying their estate plan, they don't have to have these complex provisions, including so-called A and B trusts. They can simply have a trust that passes their entire estate to a surviving spouse and allow the spouse to make certain elections with the assistance of their attorney, accountant, and other financial advisors.
So let's talk about the idea of the trust itself, because depending on which states, I have had clients that have been told by attorneys that probate isn't a big issue in certain states, where in others it is. But let's talk about the advantages of a trust, not only just in, let's say, avoiding probate, doubling the estate tax exemption, depending if you're wealthy or not, and then also conservatorships, the other things that trusts are used for, because many individuals, we see them more in use in California than we do in other states. Maybe that's because there's more wealth here, because it's just expensive. I mean, if you own a home, you're probably a millionaire.
That's very true, Jim. The use of trust, I do find, is quite prevalent here in California for a number of reasons. And you hit on one very important one, and that is to avoid probate proceedings. In certain states, the process of probate, which is essentially just settling a deceased person's estate, that's filing the person's will with the clerk of the court and asking the judge to admit the will to probate. A will is essentially just a legal document that directs an individual or a corporation named an executor to settle a deceased person's estate, and that requires paying final expenses, collecting assets, and making distributions. Unfortunately, in California, there is a state-mandated administration fee that both the executor and the executor's attorney are able to charge. There's a fee schedule that essentially is based on the value of a deceased person's estate. So we oftentimes try to advise clients to transfer as many assets as possible into a revocable living trust in order to avoid that court process. It helps speed up the administration. It helps avoid the court-mandated administration fees, and it allows assets to pass oftentimes much quicker to the heirs of a deceased person or their intended beneficiaries. Another use for living trusts is to help avoid guardianship proceedings during lifetime. As we all know, people are living much longer, and unfortunately, there are more instances of individuals that no longer have the ability to manage their financial affairs during their lifetime. And unfortunately, without a living trust, the family members will have to potentially seek a court petition to have somebody declared incompetent. And that's oftentimes a costly and a very open and contentious matter for, if you can imagine, bringing somebody into court and having people testify as to their capacity can be very daunting for an individual who's had the keys essentially to their car taken away. And so being able to keep the family matters private and allow a successor trustee to step in and administer an incapacitated person's financial affairs is oftentimes a very beneficial reason for having a funded living trust during lifetime.
You know, you mentioned that the estate tax has been repealed 3 times over the years, and it always comes back. Todd, what do you do in a situation like that where we know Congress and each administration is always tinkering? I can't think of a president, at least in my lifetime, that hasn't tinkered with the tax bills. You saw it with Reagan. You saw it with George H. Bush, Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, Barack Obama, and now Donald Trump.
Yeah, that's correct. I think that the one thing that we all know, and this obviously goes back to Benjamin Franklin, is there are 2 certainties in life, and those are death and taxes. And there's one other certainty, and that's that we're going to have congressional elections every 2 years, and we're going to have a presidential election every 4 years. So we're bound to see changes in tax policy. We're bound to see changes over the years. And, you know, it's been pretty clear that the estate tax is one area that, you know, lawmakers have attacked over the years as essentially double taxation, taxation during lifetime and then potentially an estate tax upon the death of an individual. But, you know, with the exemptions being increased to, at this point, over $5.5 million, and the fact that it only affects less than 0.5% of every family, it's interesting to note that it is something that is probably has an overinflated significance in the current tax debate, but still it is something that is significant for the family members that have to pay it. So I'm going to be paying close attention. I hope everybody else pays close attention to what happens with this current tax law, and I'm sure that we'll see the sausage being made in Washington, D.C. and have something different come out at the end of the day.
Todd, are you aware in this current reform proposal if they are going to do away with the step-up basis and cost where capital gains are forgiven at death? Because I know in the Obama administration that was brought up several times. So if they're lowering taxes, let's say estate taxes, and at the same time they get rid of the step-up, for many individuals, that would be a tax increase.
Yeah, that's a very good point, Jim. So the so-called step-up in basis is essentially a gift upon the death of most individuals, meaning that if you're to pass away with or inherit assets that your ancestor acquired many, many years ago with a very low cost basis, or perhaps it was real estate and it had both appreciated over time and it had been depreciated by the ancestor, when you turn around and sell that particular asset that you inherited after you've inherited it, the tax basis starts fresh from the day of the deceased person's death, meaning that you get a so-called fresh tax basis or a step-up in tax basis. In the previous repeal of the estate tax law, there was a one-year period where there was no estate tax, but we saw a repeal of the so-called step-up in basis. So what that meant for a lot of families who had to turn around and sell assets or they had inherited assets and didn't want to keep them, they had to figure out what the original tax basis was in some of those assets. And that, as you can imagine, can be a bookkeeping nightmare. So interestingly, in the current draft of the tax law, there is no provision to, even when the estate tax is scheduled to be repealed in 2023, there is no provision to get rid of the so-called step-up in tax basis. That's interesting to note that the estate tax, even though it's not a significant revenue raiser for the entire federal government, it does bring in about $20 billion of revenue per year. And so if that is eliminated, presumably Congress is going to be looking for other sources of potential revenue. And one would obviously be to tax the appreciation in assets by eliminating the so-called step-up in basis. But again, that had not been proposed in the current draft of the tax bill. I will be keeping my eye on any changes, and perhaps that will be something that is proposed in the future as an offset to the loss of $20 billion in revenue on an annual basis.
So, Todd, what do you recommend to your clients? Because just in the last decade, we had two or three changes to estate taxes. A lot of individuals in the course of, let's say, doing a financial plan or a financial update, they go see their attorney, they get their wills updated, they set up a trust or do things to put their estates in order, and then they don't think about it because that's something you usually don't talk around the dinner table. Hey, let's talk about our estate plan. So they do it once and they put it aside and don't think about it, and they don't realize in the meantime there's all these tax law changes that happen, and the last decade is a good example, and here we are talking about tax law changes to estates again.
Yeah, that's a great point, Jim. When I sit down with my clients, I let them know that really the estate plan, it's a journey. It's not a destination. It's not something that you want to finish and you put a nice book up on your shelf and you call it a day. An estate plan is something that needs to be looked at on a regular basis, whether because there's a change in family situation, maybe a marriage, a death, a divorce, or a new child may be born. You also need to routinely take a look at your estate plan and make sure that it's both up to date and that it says exactly what you would like it to say if the inevitable actually happens. Because of all these changes, as you mentioned, with the tax laws over the years, it is important to make sure that your estate plan is integrated with those tax laws, and if it ends up being more complicated or perhaps needs to be tweaked, it's important to maintain a regular line of communication with your estate planning attorney and other financial advisors.
So basically what you're saying there, Todd, any kind of life changes, marriage, grandchildren, children, and maybe even a change in financial circumstances would warrant it outside of just, for example, the numerous tax law changes that we seem to get every single decade and with every president. It's almost fairly safe to say, Todd, would you agree that almost every administration tinkers with the tax bills?
Oh, I would absolutely agree with that. It does seem like we have these tinkers, and you know, we had the last major change in the overall tax laws back under the Reagan administration, you know, so it's been 30 years, but there have been constant changes with the tax laws. And, you know, I don't necessarily think that this is the last that we've heard of any change. It is fairly likely that there are going to be changes perhaps in the next 2 years, perhaps in the next 4 years. It's very likely, as we see, the one thing, as I mentioned, that's certain are death and taxes, and I'm certain that changes in the tax laws are going to continue to be something that's on the table in the near future.
So if we were to sum it up, of course, we don't know if this thing's going to pass or what it looks like when it comes through the sausage factory. But if you're an individual and you have a large estate, or even, I would say, Todd, if you set up your estate plan 5-10 years ago, it's certainly out of date and may not be compliant with the way the tax laws work today. It's a good idea to go see your estate planning attorney.
Oh, I would absolutely recommend an estate planning checkup. I think that that's something that, we all need to keep in the back of our mind, that as things change in our life, that we need to remain in regular contact with our estate planning attorney. Again, it's not something to simply say, I've finished that task and I no longer need to come back to it. It's something that we should always come back to, whether it's maybe it's not every year, but at least every 3 to 4 years, to make sure that our wishes are going to be carried out appropriately and that we either don't have too complicated or not a complicated enough estate plan.
Well, listen, Todd, if our listeners would like to get in contact with you, could you give out information how they can contact your firm?
Oh, certainly. Our firm is located very conveniently in the UTC area. We're right off of La Jolla Village Drive and Genesee, and I can be reached at our phone number of 858-750-3580. Again, that's 858-750-3580. And again, we're conveniently located off of La Jolla Village Drive in Genesee in UTC.
Todd, I want to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Some great advice. All the best to you, sir, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Jim. It was a pleasure.
That completes my interview with Todd Snyder. Once again, we still don't know at this point how this tax reform bill is going to unfold as it goes back and forth between the different committees and Congress and then finally gets passed. But the one thing that was brought up there is if it's been many, many years since you've updated your estate plan, do yourself a favor. Just like you know it's proper to go see your doctor once a year for a physical, it may be time for you to have an estate planning physical and update. The laws have changed. They changed under George W. Bush. They changed under Obama. And it looks like they're going to change again under Trump. So if you have had children, your marriage situation has changed, or your wealth, or even your health, it may be time for an estate planning checkup. I'm Jim Poplava. Thanks for listening.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.